From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. This is Jim Williams in for our good friend Steve Ryman. He's so kind to let me do this once in a while. And Steve will be back with you again tomorrow. I want to welcome into the studio Ethel Maharg. She's the Executive Director of the Right to Life Committee of New Mexico. And Pastor Clarence Washington is a Senior Pastor of Abundant Life Community Church in Albuquerque. Most recently, we've talked to him about his four-book series called The Hijack, How Dr. King's Dream Became a Nightmare. And today we're going to be talking, Ethel. Right to Life Committee is obviously talks about abortion.
Right.
But you also talk about right-to-life issues with the elderly and the disabled. And people may not realize that the New Mexico legislature actually has a lot of things they're considering that are right-to-life issues because they're kind of hidden.
Right.
And I'm going to talk about that in just a couple minutes. Before I get to the questions, I want to tell you a little bit about the Right to Life Committee of New Mexico. It's an educational, civil rights, not-for-profit, non-denominational, nonpartisan, pro-life organization. The initials for the organization are RTLCNM, so the Right to Life Committee of New Mexico. They've remained the voice for the voiceless, reminding this great state of New Mexico what is happening to our unborn children, literally the voiceless, the helpless. They are a voice for the disabled and the aged, and they believe that, you know, some of the things that are being considered that are contrary to right to life are morally and spiritually wrong and evil, and they're here to protect us. Their political efforts and educational efforts are dedicated to the proposition that all human life is precious and must be protected. Abundant Life Community Church, Pastor Washington is not only an author, but he's also a pastor, and he's doing all the things that a normal pastor does. That means you work 24 hours a day, right? And
yes.
And you have to do all the hospital visits, and you have to do all the marital counseling. I'm just teasing. But, you know, there's an old joke about that where congregations expect their pastors to, like, be available 24/7,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate both of you very much for being here. Let's get started. Ethel, you just finished the 60-day session with the New Mexico legislature, and I kind of teased you that I'd be taking a nap with all the hard work that I know you do over that 60 days. I went to the website, NM, for the New Mexico legislature, nmlegis.gov, to prepare for this interview, and I searched for legislation using the keyword abortion. I started by saying some things are hidden. Guess how many bills I found when I used the search word abortion? Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew that.
Yes.
But then I put in the word health care. Guess what I found?
Mm-hmm. Abortion.
Abortion.
Yes.
And all kinds of bills that have to do with that. So I wanted to start with, Ethel, are you ever shocked by what our political leaders are trying to make the law of the land?
Not anymore.
No?
No. Not anymore. In fact, I was just sitting here searching for something about Senator Schmetti's. You know, when I first came to Right to Life, I had come from the pregnancy center movement. We went there. We were dealing with, you know, women, men, families, you know, and loving them, you know, while they had chosen life. For of the whole time that I was there, 5 years, I think we only lost one. And that was incredible, just an incredible experience for me. But on this other side, in the political arena, it was like they're saying, what? What are they saying? And after that first legislative session, I thought, I cannot believe these people and how evil they are. And people used to ask me, they said, well, how are you doing, Ethel? And I said, well, I pray all the way over there and I cry all the way back, because it was that hard. It was difficult. And this year was horrendous.
Ethel, you talk about abortion. You talk about, Pastor Washington's going to talk about black genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Abortion being so prevalent.
Yes.
Right, Pastor?
Yes.
In the black community.
Yes.
That he believes it's genocide.
It
and
is.
I mean, that has so many implications beyond horrible numbers. It has to do with future generations and the stability of our country. And I mean, so much more. And we're going to talk about that in a second. Ethel, I want you to, I know that you stand beside a lot of women at the pregnancy centers,
yes,
the various ones. And a lot of the people that are working in these pregnancy centers are people that have had abortions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they've experienced hurt and they've had the mental aspects of it, which is never talked about mm-hmm. before you have an abortion.
Right.
And they have come to faith in Christ.
Right.
And they are caring for people, regardless if you have had an abortion or not, they love you.
Mm-hmm.
They've been loved. And now they're in a ministry because yes. of the terrible experience. So could you make sure you emphasize for us that the people that, and I know you're loving to everybody, I'd be mad. So if I'm at the legislature and I'm having a conversation with somebody that's promoting late-term abortion, which we'll talk about too, I don't know how loving I can be. Yeah. But you are always kind. You are always loving. And I don't know how you do that.
Well, Jim, I'm telling you, I have to tell, that's why I was looking up this bill, because in that year, I think I just had to walk away. Senator Schmetes was proposing a bill. There was a little girl, her name was Twyla, and she was visibly disabled. She was in a wheelchair, and this was to not to place a DNR on a disabled child, which they're doing at the hospital right now. DNR, do not resuscitate.
Right.
And they were doing that without the parent's knowledge or permission. And this little girl, they had already placed three of them on her. And the mom was telling me, she says, I'm scared to death to leave my child there alone for fear that when I come back, she'll be gone. She will have died. And they had this, and Senator Schmetes called me because I need somebody to testify. So I went in there and I testified. And all they could say was, I mean, they use such language that it infuriates, because it's just, well, it would just be too confusing. And I thought, for who? Who is it? The ACLU would come on. They had medical professionals there. And they just tabled that bill. That little girl there is there. Her parents are begging for her life. And she's there. And I cannot tell you how furious. I left that room in tears. And then I walked about a mile in heels up a road. I'm not kidding you. I was so angry. I walked up this hill in a dress, in heels, in my coat. We were expecting a rally that evening, and it was cold. But I was so angry about what they had just done to her and to her parents and to anybody else in the state. So this year, Senator Schmetes brought it back up. And thankfully, in that committee, it did pass. I was looking to see whether or not it had gone forward. But I can't even tell you how angry I have been.
So tell us some of the bills that mm-hmm. were introduced and mm-hmm. which ones passed.
Well, HB7, HB7 and that one, that had three portions to it. It had promotion of abortion, promotion of transgender transition, and then also the banning of any communities. And I really think that was the biggest emphasis, because, you know, there's three communities that banned abortion in their area, and that's Clovis, Eunice, and Hobbs. And then two counties in that is Otero.
So they're not allowed to ban abortion now?
No, not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I want you to explain.
They already did that. They said, we do not want abortion in our areas.
Oh, good.
And so what they did is they went ahead and they forged ahead. Okay, Roosevelt County was the other one. So Clovis, Hobbs, and Eunice, yes. And so Then what happened is the attorney general filed suit against them that you can't do that. You can't govern yourself. And he began to do a lot of, I have so many stories, like take forever to tell you. But they were now saying that it was great public importance. We had previously just filed a lawsuit, and they told us that we didn't have standing because it was not a matter of great public importance. And he turns around and uses the same language. But nonetheless, all right, so now HB7 is there to shut down anybody that's going to speak. So if you think about it, HB7 on abortion, if a child mentions that they would like abortion, you have to facilitate it.
And that's
a school teacher. That's a nurse.
That's without a parent's permission.
Without a parent's permission or knowledge. Parents can be, I'm sorry, but parents, you're not important in this decision. And that transition, the other one too, Yes. You can go and they can begin to transition, give them the drugs, the transition drugs over at Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. And so these kids will become, boys will become girls, girls, boys, and then they'll begin the mutilation process of that.
Without parental permission.
Or knowledge. That's the other thing. So it's a real divisive measure. And then, of course, if you're one of those communities, you cannot stop these people. You cannot govern yourself. You cannot say that you don't want that in your community. So it's very divisive. It's an attack on the family, attack on our children. And so that was that one. And anyway.
So we've started to build on what the problem is and mm-hmm. make our listeners start to think about, I didn't ever hear about an abortion bill. I heard about health care bills. Mm-hmm. Well, all you got to do is go actually read the bills, and you can go to nmlegis.gov, go to keywords, just put in health care, and the first three or four things that come up, if you click on the bills, they all talk about abortion.
Right.
And it's just unbelievable.
Yes.
So as we're building on the problem, I need to turn to Pastor Washington in your third book series. And there's a lot, you've been on a number of times to talk about your books. Mm-hmm. And I know that it is a long read because there's four books, but the information is really, really valuable. You provide a lot of biblical insight. You have a lot of very clear data and information, stories about history. You talk about Dr. King and what you believe his beliefs were. So I want you to talk about, you're not calling it black genocide. In your third book, you say this is, you're not talking about black abortion. You're not talking about abortion. You're talking about black babies and the genocide of those children. And that is, I don't think people even know what that means, Pastor.
Yeah, well, you know, I am talking about, you know, black babies being killed, but being killed, being intentionally targeted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're intentionally targeted. And when you think about the fact that 80% of the abortions prior to Roe v. Wade in 1973 was by white women, 80%. But as soon as Roe v. Wade was changed, came into effect, that changed the whole thing around, because from that point on, then the abortion mill was given a chance to establish surgical abortion clinics primarily in black and brown neighborhoods. And so once they were able to do that,
so actually they have set up clinics specifically in these neighborhoods.
80% of the surgical abortion clinics are in black and brown neighborhoods. The biggest abortion clinic now in the U.S. in Houston, Texas, is just a walking distance from an Hispanic neighborhood. I mean, this is something that was done on purpose. That's why I say that people of color were targeted. Their neighbors were targeted.
And it's billed as, you talked about the language used, mm-hmm, the rhetoric.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's billed as women's health care.
Oh, right.
But there, the thing that is, so as a Christian, I know that we should be concerned with human life. And Pastor's going to give us, actually, I did never really realize this verse had to do with children before they were born and after. We'll talk about that in just a second. So, mm-hmm, so stay tuned with us. But Ethel, about a year ago, our governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, pushed a bill through the New Mexico legislature to allow for abortion up to the time of birth.
Uh-huh.
I still can't believe that. I still can't believe that a completely viable child. Now, I know that child that's only, you know, 12 weeks in the womb is just as important. But I think for a lot of our listeners, it doesn't seem like a person yet. But that baby the day before is supposed to be born,
right,
that's a person.
That is a person.
There's no arguing here.
Uh-huh.
So, and that person cannot defend itself. It's voiceless. Who, if not us, is going to defend the lives of those children?
Right. Yeah, who, if not us? And we, as the body of Christ, have the greatest responsibility to do that. Because I just heard this, you know, where else on earth, where else do you know the time and the place that somebody's going to die?
only Jesus mm-hmm. knew.
But now we know.
Yeah, yes. Now we know.
We know the time and the place that children are scheduled to die. And we as a church need to rise up to do something
yes.
about that.
Yes.
And so, but they use language. They use language very effectively. They say it's women's health care, women's rights, all these things that sound so wonderful and privileged. It's your privilege to have an abortion, to kill your child. Okay, up to the day of delivery. Now, I want to tell you something very important that took place in last year's legislative session when they shut down the Capitol. This is really important for people to understand because most people don't know this. HB, when in 2019, when we first started this, when I first started in Right to Life, we went in there, we defeated the bill HB 51. Okay, and that bill was this. It was an abortion bill, I tell them, but those of us that were pro-life fought for it because it protected doctors and women, right? That law stated, the 1960 law stated, 69 law stated that if an abortion was to take place, it would be in a hospital with doctors, and it would be only for rape and incest, period. Very, very limited. What they had said that abortion was supposed to be, safe, legal, and rare, right? So... It's not safe. They've already shown that it is not safe. In fact,
You're talking a lot about physical, but it's also mentally not safe.
It's also mentally not safe. I mean, we can go about that side in a little bit, but so what happened is they eradicated that bill, and I'm going to tell you, never was I so disgusted with our legislators at that time, as I watched senators, and I'll just name them, Linda Lopez, because they're on camera. They'd sit there and cross their arms. They refused to debate their own bill. The decorum was terrible. It was horrible watching them. And our senators were in there trying to fight for this to be done. Well, they went ahead and they passed. They got rid of that law. Hey, they got rid of the 1969 law. But this is great. This is something that they failed to do. I always say in their arrogance, they didn't put anything else in its place. Mm. So the reason that we went to court, there was three of us that fought this, and we went to court to a judge and said, tell us this, Your Honor, is there a law in New Mexico that protects abortion? There isn't.
Wow.
There isn't, because they got rid of it. They got rid of it. And so now they're going in there and they're pushing it. So states are doing whatever it is that they want. And so now this year, that's why the Attorney General is fighting us and fighting those communities that say, we don't want you to send your telemedicine, because that's exactly what they're doing. And that, in fact, well, I don't know if you want to talk about that. Even the, and I'll just address that, the Satanic Temple that people are freaking out about. It's telemedicine. That's what it's about. It's telemedicine. It's a media ploy. It's intended to scare the heck out of everybody. It's just a media ploy. The people that own it, that own the temple, they're atheists. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in the devil. They're just using it as a vehicle to use to promote abortion. Okay. So anyway, so the thing is that they use language and they use it very, very effectively. And we all buy the lie that it's that we have a right. We have a right to kill another person. Where do we have that right?
Well, none. And then they try to redefine person. I mean, I just that's oh, that's God. Just baffling me. Well, so the reason that I wanted to talk about this issue as a civil rights issue mm-hmm. is because part of the mission statement of the Right to Life Committee is that you're an educational civil rights not-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
And Pastor Washington has put in years of study about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and all that he did in this country. Books based on Dr. King's dream, which if you read the I Have a Dream speech, if you listen to the I Have a Dream speech, you know that Dr. King was a Christian. Mm-hmm. Now, could Dr. King be criticized for his lifestyle? Probably not as much as my lifestyle. I mean, that's just the truth. All of us are sinners. All of us have different things going on. So am I saying Dr. King was a perfect person? No. But he was a Christian man, and he put his life on the line.
Yes.
Literally. Yeah.
And he did it peacefully. Mm-hmm. Those are God things right there.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Pastor Clarence Washington and Ethel Maharg. She is the director of the Right to Life Committee of New Mexico. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect.
We're back with Ethel Mahar, the Executive Director of the Right to Life Committee, and she's always gracious to come in. And I'm sorry I'm late today, guys. taking care of my dad, who is aged and elderly, and I will at another time talk to you about the mistreatment he's been receiving in a facility that we just had him, and I just moved him home today. So that's why I was a little bit late. Pastor Washington's written a four-book series. Volume 1 is The Dream. Volume 2 is The Hijack. Volume 3 is The Nightmare. And Volume 4 is The Recovery, really focusing on how Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream, and he so eloquently portrayed that in the I Have a Dream speech, what his dream was for America. So if I could take abortion and say, this is illustrative of The Hijack, tell us how what the dream is and kind of how you contrast those two things.
Well, first of all, you know, if you talk about all the elements of the dream, it doesn't really make any difference which one you do, then the hijack is really just the exact opposite of what Dr. King did, what his dream specified. As a matter of fact, when you look at things like, you know, critical race theory, those people, they purposely made that argument the exact opposite of what Dr. King said in his dream, because if his dream becomes a reality, then their agenda just falls out the window. I mean, it falls by the wayside.
But don't they claim some connection to Dr. King?
If you read, there's a book by one of the proponents of critical race theory. They try to say that that Dr. King's dream, that they try to say the critical race theory is based on some portion of Dr. King's dream, which is totally, you know, it's just a lie. When you look at it, you know right away that Dr. King would have nothing to do with critical race theory. But also, Dr. King, you know, he made the comment, he said that the Negro cannot win if he is willing to sacrifice the future of his children for immediate personal comfort and safety. He was totally against it. His niece, Dr. Alveda King, was totally against abortion. You know, she's a very strong pro-life advocate. And so Dr. King's dream is totally opposite of what the pro-choice abortion argument is about. As a matter of fact, when you look at what Dr. King's dream is all about, if you look at the very first goal, for example, as I say in Volume 1, The Dream, is that his very first goal was to make the U.S. Constitution, Declaration of Independence, to make those founding documents a reality in the lives of all the people. And as we know that, whereas the pro-abortion people try to say that that abortion is a right, the First Amendment tells us that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is a right. So it's life that is the right and not abortion. So, and that's a major part of Dr. Martin Luther King's dream. You can't separate his dream from the American dream.
Pastor, I have this conversation all the time with people, especially people in high school.
Yes.
And they will stand on whatever they want to stand on, and they will talk about America as a democracy. And I let them talk, and then I look at them and I say, do you realize that America is not a democracy? We're a democratic republic.
Mm-hmm.
And then to look at you, you know, like that, you know, deer staring at the headlights, and you say what that means is that our government was designed, it doesn't always accomplish this, but it was designed so that the majority can't dominate the individual, and that the individual rights are protected for people that are weaker and voiceless and can't defend themselves. That's what separates our country. That was,
yes,
I believe, a Christian principle,
yes,
that our forefathers put in. Now, were all of our forefathers Christians? No, but there were a lot of principles that they adopted that have worked for hundreds of years and have separated our country from most countries in the world. So I think that people around the world now look at the United States and go, wow, you guys are nothing like you were supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
No, yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think that anybody in America has ever claimed that America was a perfect place.
No.
But we have the best founding documents of any place. we have a self-healing document. And if we will follow that document, it'll heal whatever problems we have in America. There's nothing so terrible in America that our Constitution won't cure if we will follow it. And so that's why Dr. King, his very first goal was that for all Americans to receive the to have the founding documents applied to them, because he knew that if we do that, that whatever problems we have could be solved.
One of the things that you pointed out on a show that I did with you a couple years ago is you said, read the I Have a Dream speech in one particular section, and Dr. King, and I'll paraphrase, said, our white brothers and sisters cannot exist without us.
Yes.
The races are interdependent, yes, and that is so true.
Yeah, we may have came up here on different ships, as he might have said, but we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
And so, but now you see, we're trying to divide us in every way they can, through race, economic divisions, gender, sex, you name it, every way that they possibly can, they're trying to divide us, because that's the only way that they can bring down America. The only people that can destroy America are Americans ourselves, because we have the best founding document there ever was. And if we will return and be people of faith with our document, we're invincible.
Pastor, you said something about this earlier, but I'd like you to reiterate. How many black babies are aborted every year?
I will give you the figure that, which I don't think is correct, but if you look at the stats, we're talking about 400,000 maybe a year, which don't really tell the true story. Okay, it's a lot more than that, but that's what the stats say. From 1973 to 2010, for example, the stats are given of being 18.75 million, okay, over that 37-year period of time. But we all know that those stats can't be relied on. The problem is that if you look at the percentages, now if you look at that, and so let's say that there are 400,000 babies that were aborted, okay? There are about a million total Americans on the board every year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, that would say that 40% of America was composed of black people. Far from that, and we know that, okay? So that figure, if you look at some of the stats, for example, and I'll just give one of them, white women are 61% of the male population in America and account for 36% of all abortions. Black women are 14% of the female population and account for 30% of the abortions. And Hispanic women are 15.8% of the female population and have 25% of abortions. Now, this is a census that was taken by, in 2009, 2010, but it still gives a good representative figure of what we're talking about. And so it's a big figure when you look at the percentages. And then if you look at New York, for example, for every 1,000 babies that are born, 1,200 are aborted.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see that is horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So in New York City, African American population is constantly going down, okay, on the decrease. And if you look at the trend lines for the population trend lines for African Americans, it's leveled at best, maybe a very slight increase, because New York is not atypical of every state. New York does everything that they can to abort as many babies as they can, and so it's a problem that Dr. King never would have approved of. No way,
Ethel. What does the Right to Life Committee of New Mexico, and I guess the Right to Life Committee nationally, doing about this problem?
Well, we're fighting it just like we do here. You know, we go to the legislature, we try to get candidates that would be pro-life.
Their director runs for mayor, or I'm sorry, for governor. I'm sorry. Already did the mayor thing.
No, not all of them are that crazy.
No, but what you did, Ethel, is you brought to the forefront these right to life issues.
Yes.
And it's always fascinating to me to see our local reporters.
Mm-hmm.
They almost don't know what to do with you.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, they want to say something, but they don't want to offend anybody. Mm-hmm. And they realize that if they say anything, they'll be offending the most outspoken people. So I've got a theory.
What's that?
I think we need to become the most outspoken people.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We do.
Yes.
Is that wrong?
No, that's right on. Right on.
Can we do that in love?
Sure, yes. We can.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I just have to tell you, in that debate of all of us, they answered all of the, ask all the questions, but they left out one.
What was
that? I still have it. I have the recording, the one on abortion.
They didn't ask it?
They never. They did ask it. They never aired it.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You're kidding me.
No. Mm-hmm. And I had, I'm the one, well, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I answered it directly, you know, and so no, but they never played that. They never played that. And then there were other outlets I was listening to as I was going on, and they would talk about everything else, but they didn't want to talk about the abortion. They, you know, it's just one of those things, but I just kept on trucking, you know, so.
Pastor, I have in my mind that there's 10 or 20 women listening right now that have had abortions, mm-hmm. and they've been thinking about it. They're listening to us now. Mm-hmm. They've heard us use some words like evil and awful, and they may be feeling that we're talking about them, and that's not really what we're doing.
No.
We're talking about the act.
Yes.
What do you have to say to people that obviously have sorrow and probably have repented of, gee, I shouldn't have done this? And not only that, but now they need some help moving forward because they're overwhelmed mm-hmm. with this grief. They've never probably grieved like you do when you have a funeral. Mm-hmm. You don't have a funeral when you have an abortion, right?
No.
So there's mental health, there's spiritual health. What do you have to say to those people? Can they be okay after being involved in abortion?
Well, that's why Jesus Christ died. He is the essence of forgiveness. He forgives everybody of everything, and as a Christian person, you are commanded to forgive everybody of everything, including yourself. A big problem, I think, with a lot of women that have abortion, even though they know Scripture says that if you forgive your sins, He's faithful and just and will forgive your sins and cleanse you of all unrighteousness, people sometimes have a hard time forgiving themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the big problems I think that women have who have had abortions. God will forgive them. There's no sin that anybody has done that God won't forgive. All they have to do is ask, Lord, please forgive me of my sin. And He's right there for them. Mm-hmm. When we were doing the sidewalk ministry outside the abortion clinic, that was one of the things that we make sure that that women realized that if they had an abortion, if we were not able to talk them out of it, when they came out, we made sure that they knew exactly where they could find help for them. As a matter of fact, Abundant Life, as Ethel knows, because she gave us a workshop on the discipleship.
Making life disciples.
Yeah, making life disciples. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that making life disciples is making sure that we understand as a church how to encourage and comfort people so they can move on and not let the abortion that they had be a hindrance to their further life. No one is perfect. We all make mistakes. And God is there for us in the times that we have made a misstep. He's right there for us. And so, that's what we focus on. We are in the process of trying to have a very powerful and effective ministry for unwed mothers, our unwed mothers ministry, because we know that in many times the church has not been very gracious, not been very merciful. And many times women, when you ask them if you belong to a church congregation or you regularly attend one, they say yes, but they are afraid to tell the elders or other people of the church because they thought that they would look down on them. But that's not what the church is all about. Mm-hmm. The church is supposed to be there to help them, to encourage them, to help them through the very difficult times that they go through. And so a lot of people have had abortions don't really understand that Christians are the one people that really love them. Mm-hmm. And we're not looking for people to be perfect. We're there to help them through their shortcomings when they fall short of the mark.
Ethel taught me something a year or so ago. She said, it's not a mistake necessarily when a woman gets pregnant because God doesn't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And So now it's time to wake up, do what God wants you to do, raise that child, and provide a great home and be a great mom and dad. And last question of this segment. There are men who have impregnated women and that have pressured them to get an abortion.
80%.
And I think there's men that are feeling sorry for having done that. Mm-hmm. And probably that relationship is not intact anymore. Mm-hmm. What can men do to make that right?
They can do the same thing as the women. You know, they can ask for forgiveness because we have a great God and that He forgives.
Yes.
And I want to add one thing to Pastor Washington. What he said is that, you know, I've learned this, that that we really can't forgive ourselves. That's not for us to do. What we are to do is receive what God has given us, because God is the only one that forgives. We're the ones that receive that forgiveness from Him. And when we receive that forgiveness, He can make us whole. But if you kind of continue to say, well, I can't forgive, I can't, it's not for you to do. That's God's business. Our business is to receive that healing and that salvation. And as far as men, you know, they're in my heart a lot. It hurts them just as much, believe it or not. And I want to say this. One time when I used to do all the training at CareNet, and I remember one time there was a young man that said this to me. He says, you know, I know this guy, and they had an abortion, and he just can't get over it. And I'll just call him John. I said, John, I said, you have a son, don't you? And he said, yes. And he said, if he died, would you get over it? The entire class. It was my largest class. They were quiet because for the first time, they understood that it was a child.
Yes.
And, you know, I did statistics about when couples, nothing has anything to do with abortion, if a child dies because of whatever, maybe they got killed or whatever, that relationship suffers greatly. And there's like almost an 80% chance that couple will not survive that. So how much more when you intentionally took the life of your child? It's already proven to, if the woman tries to save her relationship with that man, that relationship never makes it because he was supposed to protect her. He was supposed to protect her and her child. And instead, he bullied her or he pressured her, you know, and then later, you know, like, and most of the time, I'm going to tell you, you know, men will pressure because they're afraid. That's what it comes from. The entire thing that abortion is, it's fear. It's fear-based. And the other side uses it very well, the pressure, that fear. And so people will pressure because they're afraid. They don't know if they'll be able to make it, you know, if they'll be a good dad, be a good provider, good mom, good dad, all these other things. And so they're all afraid. And so they pressure her because I can't deal with it.
Ethel, let's talk about not only can a man receive the same forgiveness.
Yes.
But because I'm a man, and I've done a lot of things wrong, I kind of want men to go a step farther. Mm. Not because you want to rekindle the relationship, although I want you to have, I think you should have a relationship with your child.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should be a dad.
Yes.
Now, maybe you've done things so badly that you're not ever going to be entrusted with the child, but that doesn't mean you can't support the child, doesn't mean you can't pray for the child, that doesn't mean you can't be available if and when there's some healing that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that it might be a blessing to a woman if a man, let's say this happened 30 years ago, would come and say, I was wrong. Please forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Do you think that would help a woman to hear that?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, I sure think that it would.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be back so far in our conversation today. I'm going to joke around because we're all three of us Christians. We've been talking about those sinners, but we're going to come back and talk about the Christians and how this affects us. We'll be back right after these messages. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
So blessed that you've joined us today on ABQ Connect. Again, Jim Williams in for Steve Ryman. Steve will be back with you tomorrow, and I'm honored to have Pastor Clarence Washington. He is the pastor of Abundant Life Church. He's the author of a four-book series that we've been talking about, but some other books as well. We'll ask him about that in just a second. And Ethel Maharg, who is the director of the Right to Life Committee of New Mexico. And we're talking about abortion and right to life issues as a civil rights. Now, we haven't really talked about euthanizing the elderly. We haven't talked about some of those issues. But I kind of get the feeling that we've been talking, as I said earlier before the break, those sinners. But I got to tell you, when you know the old adage, you're pointing your finger at those sinners, but the other three fingers are pointing right back at you. You know, this is something that's prevalent throughout the Christian community, mm-hmm. isn't it, Ethel?
Right. Yes. Yes. Well, there, you know, there's 1 in 4 women has had an abortion. Period.
Period.
And that means in the church, in the grocery store, in the office, I don't care where she is, there are 1 in 4, maybe it's 1 in 3 women has had an abortion. And so you have an entire congregation that is in pain, for one. Mm-hmm. So, and so it's 1 in 3 women, 1 in 3 men, 1 in 3 grandmas, grandpas.
Does having a baby, though, and going through the pregnancy heal the congregation?
You mean after?
What I'm talking about is, I think the enemy is so good at deceiving us. Mm-hmm. So you have a pregnancy, 15-year-old mm-hmm. child. Dad happens to be a deacon at the church. Oh, I don't want to be embarrassed by this. I'm going to take my daughter to have an abortion. Mm-hmm. Well, you're just exacerbating the problem.
Yes, you are.
Mm-hmm. It should be, my daughter's in this situation, mm-hmm. and the church rallies around her and loves her no matter what.
Yes.
She has this beautiful baby, this community's behind her. To me, that brings healing.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, and that's why we have our own mother's ministry. Because we come alongside the young ladies, provide whatever care that they need. If we need to go to CareNet or Right to Life, whoever, because a lot of organizations have resources. They know about resources, you know. And so that's what it's all about, coming alongside of the person who's had a misstep, you know. And I think that it does do a lot of positive things for the congregation, because it gets the congregation to experience God's grace and His mercy and His love in a real-life situation. Sometimes I think churches can be too rigorous in their doctrine, to where they lose sight of the fact that one of the biggest properties or character of Jesus Christ was His love. Mm. We saw how He handled the Samaritan woman that He met, who had had several husbands, for example. He didn't persecute her. He didn't condemn her, you know. And I think that when the church has a chance to do that, that can bring some great healing to the church itself, because now we learn how to extend that type of grace and mercy to other areas of our ministry in our lives.
So the message of Planned Parenthood, the message of abortionists in this country, the message of for example, the Democrat Party in New Mexico. And by the way, I'm not going to pick on the Republicans or the Democrats. However, this is a fact that I need to point mm-hmm. out. In the election of 2020, which was COVID year, mm-hmm. I believe there were 7 pro-life Democrats that were incumbents in the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party made right. sure that they all lost their elections.
Right, because they stood for life. They primaried them.
Because they stood for life. And mm-hmm. so is it true today? And I'd love for somebody that's in the Democratic Party to call us and let mm-hmm. us know that I'm completely wrong. I'd mm-hmm. love to hear this, but I don't believe I am wrong.
That's part of their platform.
The Democratic Party right now
is abortion.
Is abortion. And they don't have room for people that are pro-life.
No.
No.
They don't.
No.
But there are some Democrats in there, and we are grateful for them, that they still stand for life.
They do.
They still do. There's some in there.
What courage that has to take.
You bet. I mean, the moment that they put their name, they say, they light up the thing and says, no, yes, whatever they voted, and it's against the party. Boy, I'm telling you, they've got, as they say, hell to pay, because they are definitely pressured. They definitely are.
And there are some Christians who claim to be pro-life, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They vote people in who don't support pro-life, who are not pro-life. They vote pro-choice in. But if you talk to those people, they would tell you, no, I'm pro-life. Mm-hmm. But when you see how they vote, you know they're not voting a pro-life ticket.
So the question is then, what's a greater sin? Abortion, or are you voting for it?
Yeah.
You know, you're voting for abortion, or the person that had the abortion. So you both need healing. You both need forgiveness.
Yes.
Because you made a wrong choice. When you voted for somebody that you know supports abortion, you are just as guilty.
Yes, you are.
Why is this issue so important to the Democratic Party and to organizations like Planned Parenthood? What is it, money?
It is money.
Yes.
It's billions.
Yes.
Billions of dollars go to Planned Parenthood. I mean, and you would think that they're starving because they're like, oh, please support us. Like, you know, yeah. And like right now, Governor Grisham is sending $10 million down south to an abortion clinic that's not even going to get off the ground for another year. And they need millions more. They want to just keep pouring. Yeah, it's about money. It is about, because, and we, I don't know if we've spoken this, I think we might have at one point, but an abortion costs anywhere from $500 in the early stages in the first trimester, all the way to $18,000 if it's a late trimester abortion. So, you know, and they're doing them every 15 minutes.
Ethel, I'm going to tell you something that I've learned about our medical system. I'd mentioned that my dad's elderly. He had a fall 10 days ago, broke his collarbone, broke his hip, just a slight crack. He's okay. But I had him at Rust Hospital, which is a Presbyterian operation. Tremendous care there. Unbelievably nice, kind people. But then they transferred him to a so-called rehab place. Well, I have found out in the last 5 days that this organization is billing Medicare for physical therapy and occupational therapy. Not one time in the time that he's been in that facility did they provide that. And so now I just decided I'm going to start digging into this. So what I found out about the any government-subsidized medical help, the providers are habitually billing the government 3 to 10 times what they should be billing. And that, that's going to bankrupt our country because that's not the way capitalism works. You've got to make a fair profit. It's no problem with making a profit, but some things have to change. Some people need to wake up. I mean, we need to hire some accountants, you know, some people that really understand how to look at these numbers. Remember the old days when the Pentagon was criticized for buying those $1,000 hammers? Oh, it's... We're now buying, you know, $10,000 stethoscopes and other things. I mean, it's just crazy what's happening in our medical system. But money, really, you think is is the
and now money is power.
Yeah.
With money now, they can buy politicians off so they can perpetuate the abortion mill. We know that Jesse Jackson, classically, when he ran for president, he was first. He was pro-life, and then when he ran for president, he found there was plenty of Planned Parenthood money to be had if he changed his viewpoint, and he did.
What's interesting is that Jesse Jackson was with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes, yes.
He was in his presence. He knew him.
He knew what he stood for, but he needed money to finance his campaign, and he was willing to change his stance and dupe a lot of people into thinking that pro-life was what the Planned Parenthood of America said that it was good for the community. And so he changed his mind. It happens all the time. Congressional caucus the same way. They get lots of money from and even the black congressional caucus. They get lots of money for re-election from Planned Parenthood.
Wow.
They do.
I had a man say to me not even 10 days ago, "The Bible does not talk about abortion. You don't believe that's true, Pastor."
It talked about abortion every place. The scripture you have was in Exodus chapter 21. 21. But a life inside the womb should be subject to the same principles of the law as a life outside of the womb. And that's what Exodus chapter 21 tells us. If a pregnant woman, if men are in the fight and they strike a pregnant woman and they lose the baby or whatever happens to the baby, then the person that did that deserves the same thing that happened to them. And so they just saying that the life inside the womb is just as important and should be fall under the same principle of the law as the life outside of the womb.
That is just amazing.
Yes.
I said at the onset, I hadn't really considered that scripture in light of abortion, and you're so right about it.
Yeah, I preached on that is part of the conglomerate of messages. You know, in Proverbs 6:17 says that God hates abortion. 2 Kings chapter 24, verse 4 says that the reason why Israel was carried out, I should say Judah, why Judah was sent into 7 years of captivity or was captured by the Babylonians led by King Nebuchadnezzar because they had shed so much blood that they were not willing to forgive. And there was a king that had shed so much blood. And even though this particular king had repented and had changed his ways and God gave him his kingdom back, it said that these things happened because God was not willing to forgive all of the innocent blood that the Israelites had shed in the past.
That's amazing. You know, Paul the Apostle was killing Christians. He wasn't aborting them. He was just killing them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then he repented. Everybody knows the story about how he was blinded on the road to Damascus. And the Christians took him, knowing who he was, into their homes, ministered him. He had a change of heart. I bring that up because, Pastor, you have a vision for spiritual leaders in the black community in this country to lead all of us to change.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us that vision.
Well, you know, black people, by their experience in the slavery and Jim Crow, we have, whether we want it or not, we have been made the conscience of America simply because we can speak and we can almost demand to be heard because of our past experience. And if we're going to be able to pull out of this, I think that we're going to have to take a lead role in that spiritual revival with forgiveness, because let's face it, many black Americans that have not forgiven America and the people of America, even though it was the ancestors of the people that did that, they have not forgiven, you know. And so black people have been given that role because of their experience. Now, God prepares people. When he allows you to go through something, it was for a reason. And if you've gone through a lot of persecution and oppression, it was not something that was done without a purpose. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that purpose was so that black people could right now take that lead role in leading America into a spiritual revival and a reformation of our government and the other essential institutions.
If you are a person listening and you have been espousing abortion and for fundraising reasons or whatever, and could God take that sin? Could God, just as he did with Paul the Apostle, and do amazing things to love people and to change our country? So, you know, on this radio station, I don't know how many people are listening, but I'm just praying that there are people, men and women, in the black community and the brown community and every other color under the sun that we have. I'm hoping people step up. I'm hoping they hear from the Holy Spirit, that they hear from you, Pastor. Take a look at the books Hijacked by Pastor Clarence Washington. Ethel, I know that even though the legislative session is over, you're quickly getting ready for the governor's race here in another year and a half, right?
No.
No?
I'm good. No, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to chase the church because that's where the answer is. Yeah. You know, I've been in this 10 years, and really I see that it's not going to be a bill. It's not going to be a law that's going to change, that's going to end abortion. It's going to be when people's hearts are changed.
Yes.
Only then, and Pastor Washington could tell you that himself, it is a church. When the church rises up and takes their place on this issue, that is when abortion is going to end. It's not going to end in the halls of, I promise you. I've said this repeatedly. It's like going into the pit of hell over there. It's horrible. I hate going over there. But the thing is this, is that the church has to take its place. And I have said this repeatedly, that the church has a muscle that they just aren't flexing, because if they had, it would have been game over and none of this would have happened.
In love, we can be the loudest
That's
voice.
Right.
Yeah, the church
That's
is
right.
part of the problem. The church is complicit in what is going on, and all the things that we see, whether it's critical race theory, whether it's the transgender issue, abortion, all those things that's causing America problems right now, the church is complicit in it. Until the church stands up and be the church, we're going to continue to have the problems that we have.
Thank you both. I love you both for joining us on ABQ Connect. Appreciate
you.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.